Mr. Pasternak is the owner of the radio station.
And I'm the number one DJ. I gotta tell you, boys, when people hear me describing it over the radio, they are going to remember that AM radio is a viable and modern source for news and entertainment.
You're tuned into the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Oh, I used to be number one in this town, but people don't listen to AM like they used to. Seems like it's more about FM and color TV.
That's stupid.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
I started thinking about the rest of my life. I found myself just looking out for trouble and strife. Someone with whom I spent the rest of my days. But if I ever said I wasn't set in my ways, well then I guess you caught me lying to myself. What kind of fool doesn't think about it? What kind of fool doesn't think about it? You have to be a fool not to think about it.
Welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you with us, everybody. A little Sloan kick us off tonight as we're getting ready for that concert coming up. If you have tickets, congratulations. If you don't, you're out of luck. Sloan Tour is currently going on right now all over the place. They're coming through Canada a little bit later, but March 14th and 15th, they'll be here at the Goodwill Social Club. Both shows sold out already.
Oh.
And not only are they sold out, the first show, I swear, sold out in like 20 minutes. So they actually added a second show on the Wednesday, on the 15th. That show sold out in like 30 minutes.
There you go.
So it's funny, though. I was listening to Alan Doyle the other night talk about Sloan a little bit or whatever, Alan Doyle in the History of Rock. They've been together for 31 years now. They started off in various different setups and... Mm-hmm. Two guys came from one band, they added a third guy, they added the fourth guy.
Yeah.
But they've been playing together in some way, shape, or form for 31 years.
Since before I was born.
Like, we're talking, Sloan might be, again, I'm not saying they're on the same level as the Hip. The Hip and Sloan are certainly two of the better Canadian bands, but just in terms of longevity, that is incredible.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I mean, you got to think about the rest of your life now. If you're Sloan, you're getting ready to retire at this point, right?
Sure.
Well, we'll fade that out as we get into our stories today here on the Hockey Show. How are you, Jay? How's everything going? Good.
Good. I'm happy to announce that I have as many wins in the 2022-23 season as the San Jose Sharks.
That's an impressive total.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm up there, you know.
San Jose is going to struggle this year.
It's going to be bad.
But at least they're going to look good. We'll talk about that maybe towards the end. So let's get into the stuff we missed. Obviously, we had Alexis Paddington on last week. Had a great interview with her. But there was a lot of stuff that happened in the last couple of weeks. So we're going to try and get everybody caught up as quickly as we can. Unfortunately, that means that we're probably going to have to jump into some Hockey Canada stuff. And Hockey Canada... it's going well, I guess, if you want to say it's getting better. I don't know if that really counts, but it's kind of getting better if you're Hockey Canada, because everybody's gone. I mean, I don't know if people are going to be happy about that. I mean, and again, I mean, I'll play the sound only because it needs to be played, but if you're Hockey Canada, that's legitimately, you've lost all your sponsors, you've lost all credibility, you've basically destroyed any sort of hope of ever coming back as the organization you once were. But on October 8th...
That's a good thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's be honest. It's going to be a good thing. On October 8th, though, chair of the board, Andrea Skinner, submitted her resignation. So, first domino to fall. We saw her absolutely embarrass herself in that meeting with the committee the week before. Finally, just decided, you know what? Enough's enough. I can't fulfill my duties here without looking like an idiot. And I'm resigning.
Yep. And... everyone, just thunderous applause.
3 days later, Hockey Canada came out and announced that its board of directors had announced important changes to the Hockey Canada leadership team, including the departure of Chief Executive Officer Scott Smith.
Good.
Which I'm not going to say is great, but everybody's cheering for that. The entire board also agreed to step down to make room for a new slate of directors. And I get another cheer from the crowd. That's good. They're going to still hold their elections on December 17, 2022. They're looking for people to fulfill spots on the board now. If you're interested, get your name in there, as all voting will happen.
I really just hope that from this point on, we are going to get people from outside the organization.
Well, we're going to call a penalty on this, because this might have happened in regards to what happened the next day on October 12th.
Okay.
On October 12th, it was finally released to the media. Mm-hmm. Media got their hands on it. The report filed by former Supreme Court Justice Thomas Cromwell about what went on at Hockey Canada. And it didn't go well again for Hockey Canada. Mm-hmm. Basically, CBC's Ashley Burke reported that a controversial reserve fund it used to settle a multi-million-dollar lawsuit in 2018 group sexual assault involving World Junior players was necessary, but there were serious problems with how that fund was administered. Now, before we get into this, let's clarify what Burke has set up there, because in many cases, businesses will set up a fund that basically works like a trust fund, in that if there are claims against it that insurance will not cover, so whether it be insurance for personal injury, whether it be insurance for damage, you know, to the building from somebody crashing into it, from an employee crashing into it, whatever.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of reasons for these funds to be set up. Businesses have them set up in terms of just making sure that they're not going to sort of affect the bottom line.
And it's not going to draw that cost from their pocket, which could affect, you know, your capital costs. It could affect payroll. It could affect benefits. It could affect a lot of things. So you want to have this pocket. That's why organizations get insurance, but it's also why they have accounts like this for the stuff that it won't cover.
Again, customer comes into your shop, leaving the shop, slips on ice. It's your fault. You're going to have to pay something out to that.
Exactly.
Understood. Like, that's what these things are for. Now, in saying that, though, Cromwell said, okay, this is necessary, but we got some problems.
Yes.
Now, people are going to go, okay, we'll get to the problems. Again, before we get into this, before we start digging through this, again, you're going to have to sort of grit your teeth a little bit, because there's some ridiculous stuff in here, and it will only lead to more ridiculous stuff. So here we go. The report found that Hockey Canada didn't have policies and procedures in place to govern the use of its reserve fund. So anybody could access this if they wanted to, in terms of protecting the company. It didn't fully disclose its funds in the financial records, as found by Cromwell, and it broke the rules by failing to notify members, including its provincial hockey governing bodies, failing to notify members of large payouts.
Yep.
Huge problem there. Because the National Equity Fund is what he was looking at in terms of what went on. Cromwell reviewed Hockey Canada's governance structure and found that while some provincial federations knew the National Equity Fund existed and responded to historical claims, those members say they did not think it would include protecting predators going forward. Mm-hmm. So they were aware, some of the hockey governing bodies were aware that this fund was set up to protect past indiscretions. So we're talking like Graham James indiscretions, kind of that era. But not for anything happening
currently
or in the future. Right. Hockey Canada is required to report to its members when new settlements, claims, or judgments may cost more than $500,000. But Cromwell found the hockey organization has at times failed to notify members. Cromwell identified six cases since 1999 involving settlements exceeding $500,000 that should have been disclosed. That did not happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, huge problem there, because if you're counting that at six times 500, that's only $3 million of money that was spent.
Of our money that was spent.
At minimum, $3 million that was spent without telling anybody about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so big problem there. Cromwell said, quote, "Our review of members' meeting summaries over that period indicates the members did not receive formal notice of these matters. However, Hockey Canada has advised that all of these discussions would occur in camera and that they did not keep minutes of those in-camera portions of the meeting either," unquote. So basically, if they did talk about it, they didn't keep a record of it. And if they didn't talk about it, well, that's a problem on its own.
Yeah. Which, you know, they're supposed to keep records like that because they're a republic institution.
Correct. Cromwell found that here's where parents should be angry. Okay. Yeah. This is where parents should absolutely blow the doors off their provincial governing bodies now, because this needs to go down the line a little bit. But Cromwell found of the $20.80 insurance fee that players pay to Hockey Canada, more than half If you want to know the total, it's $13.65 goes towards the National Equity Fund.
For my brother and I, that I did the math. It totals out to about $340 that my parents paid.
Each or combined?
Combined.
So your parents basically paid $340 out to sexual assault victims.
Yep.
He said participants need to know that. I don't deny that. Hockey Canada, quote, Hockey Canada has not directly advised participants about the $13.65 deposit in the National Equity Fund every year to pay premiums, deductibles, and to cover uninsured losses, Cromwell wrote. The report found that there were no policies and procedures in place to guide the use of Hockey Canada's reserve funds. He recommended coming up with guidance about who can access the funds, who signs off on payments, and how such payments are reported to the board of directors, provincial federations, and players.
For people listening, that's very basic stuff.
That's legitimately what we call, for lack of a better term, just handing off information.
Exactly.
Like, you're giving us all that money. We should be telling you how we're spending it.
Yes. And well, the thing is, when you're setting up something like that, it's part of the process to set up an account like that and set up a fund like that. You have to have governance rules and guidelines in place so you know, as an organization, how that money's spent, where it's sent, who touches it. All of that stuff is just basic business.
Okay, so we're talking about basic business. Here's where things get a little murkier now, because the Legacy Trust Fund, a.k.a. the second fund which Hockey Canada had established to cover uninsured claims for its members between 86 and 95, also, quote, had no formal policy, unquote, per Cromwell. So that means that we now have two multi-million dollar funds that have no governance whatsoever over top of them.
Yeah, it's just free money. It's just, it's money that they can
spend it as you like.
Yeah, they can use, whoever wants it can go in there, take the money, put it in for any, like, it would not surprise me if we found out that somebody just dipped into that fund to pay for dinners and, like, to buy things.
$3,000 rings
exactly.
For winning the World Juniors?
Like, that's...
Elizabeth Watson, who is the founder of Watson Advisors and International Governance Expert, holy spit that word out, said the report shows in this case an example of what can go wrong. She suggested the report has a culture of protecting the athlete, something she's seen before in cases where the rules weren't followed because of high reverence for elite performance athletes. Liberal MP Anthony Housefather said the report sounded very much like what the Parliamentary Committee was basically diagnosing for Hockey Canada as well. So he's not saying it out loud, but hey, you're covering crap up here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the thing.
As Housefather said, quote, I think it's totally fine to have a fund like this to cover uninsured claims, provided that you're transparent about it.
Yes, that is the issue. That is why we are here.
And provided that those paying into the fund know what the fund is for and what they're paying for, that was missing here.
Exactly. That's the issue. The issue was not that the fund existed. The issue was that nobody knew about it. You hid it. You covered up the payments that were coming out from it. Nobody knew that they were paying into it. There were no governance rules in place about how that money was used, who was able to use it. It was just a pile full of money that you took, you hid from all of Canada, and you used it to cover up sexual assault.
We knew that $3.55 million were spent without telling anybody, because CFO Brian Cairo told MPs the organization would settle the lawsuit with the young lady in 2018 because, quote, we didn't know the details of the night, but we did believe harm was caused. Scott Smith then weighed in on June 20th in terms of his testimony and said, quote, we made the decision to settle in the best interest of the young woman. We didn't want to litigate this. We didn't want to go through the procedure and challenge her by putting her through that circumstance, unquote. Julie McFarlane, as CBC spoke to the University of Windsor's Faculty of Law professor, called Hockey Canada's reasoning, quote, a completely disingenuous argument, unquote.
Uh-huh. What I have been saying since the beginning on this issue, part of what that young woman wanted and what women want in these cases is for people to be held accountable, for people to have to show up in court and defend themselves so they can have their voices heard.
McFarlane weighed in saying, quote, it was never necessary to run the victim through the court process. If they accept liability, there would have been a settlement negotiation and no chance of a court trial. They also did not need to bind the victim to secrecy and silence in a non-disclosure agreement. That was entirely to cover their own backs. Unquote.
Exactly. If that's the thing. If you want what's in her best interest, don't give her money and say, shut up, go away. Have consequences for these athletes.
Right.
Whether you pay the money out or not is immaterial. What matters here is that there is accountability, that there's consequences for the player's actions, and this young woman isn't silenced. The whole issue is that she was silenced to begin with.
So Provincial Hockey Federation met last Wednesday after Smith resigned. The board of directors said it would step down. They discussed the report and are expected to meet in person in Toronto on last Saturday anyway and vote on a series of recommendations. Nothing's been released yet. We don't know anything that's happened with that. Cromwell's report also recommends ensuring better gender parity on the board. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Boosting the number of members from 9 to 13. Oh, hey, one for every province and territory. What a concept.
What a crazy idea.
And extending terms for directors, which I kind of disagree with, but I understand where he's going with that. The current election is still scheduled for December 17th. When Hockey Canada released the full report publicly, the organization said, quote, updates in relation to the ongoing governance review will be made in due course, unquote. So we're still not going to see it.
Yep. They're not holding themselves accountable to showing it to us. Because if they said, oh, yeah, we'll share it with you, that means they have to share it with us.
Well, let's go to the crowd for that one. Because October 17th, there was more breaking news for Hockey Canada.
Wild.
As Katie Strang of The Athletic reported that Hockey Canada maintained a third largely shielded reserve fund for uninsured claims.
Not only did you do it once, you did it three times.
The organization also resisted calls for financial transparency, worrying its deep pockets could hurt bargaining position in settlement talks. So basically, we have so much money that if somebody saw how much money we had, we'd probably get sued for more. Let's hide some of it.
Yeah. I likened it to what happened with Alex Jones, where he was moving money around so he could file for bankruptcy to avoid paying out people
for
lawsuits.
Cromwell, in his report, found that, quote, Hockey Canada had become concerned that this change in the financial statements inflated the National Equity Fund balance artificially, which might signal a large pool of funds set aside for potential claimants and thus might increase the likelihood of additional claims. As a result, on November 17, 2016, the board approved a transfer of $10.25 million from the National Reserve Equity National Equity Fund to the IRS fund for the purpose of providing financial support against potential future non-insured claims. Now, it should be noted that the original purpose was still to make sure that if insurance costs went up, people weren't paying more. That's what that fund essentially was for. However, its purpose changed and kind of evolved into, well, if we get some more claims, the sexual assault claims against us, maybe we'll dip into this fund as well. So essentially the IRS fund became, instead of being just a fund to protect parents and kids from rising insurance costs, it became two sub-funds. One, again, intended to protect and shelter participants' costs, and second, as a reserve for uninsured claims.
Yep.
So again, Strang asked an expert on charity oversight, how could this happen? How could this be not disclosed? And the expert responded, quote, they were worried about transparency and they were trying to avoid disclosure, unquote. AKA, they covered it up.
Yeah. They committed fraud. They lied to us.
I don't understand how this could be any more black and white now.
They moved money around and hid it in a public disclosure, which they are required to do. That's fraud. They lied about how much money
we're not done with Hockey Canada. Like, this is still going to go on because they're still going to go on with more parliamentary committee meetings to find out what's going on and where all this money is now.
They committed fraud in order to say, oh, well, when people know how much money we have, more people are going to come forward and sue us because they're like, oh, they've got a bunch of money.
Again, and I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand the idea that, you know, if you're rich, you might get a bigger lawsuit issued against you.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, pretty sure the victims of sexual assault are worrying less about the money and more about the condition of finding somebody accountable.
Yes.
Not holding somebody, but finding somebody accountable.
Saying like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, you're not convicted, but you were shown in court to have committed something.
Correct.
An offense. Yeah. That's what they're after. They're not after the money.
I don't understand.
Also, those payouts are proportional to the amount of money you have. That's just the fact of the matter.
Well, if you're cooking the books, it looks like you don't have very much. NHL Diversity Inclusion came out this week.
Oh, God.
The report that they decided they were going to try and do. And we need to ask one basic question here.
This was the thing.
There you go. This is hard for me to stomach only because, again, I sat there and read this whole thing. And I hate to say that I did that, but it needed to be read because I wanted to see what the NHL was planning on doing in terms of addressing marginalized and certainly, lesser visible minorities in their fan base, their fan population.
Yeah.
So I had as a white dude, a white straight dude, I have no qualms about them, you know, marketing to me. I understand what they're doing, but I want to see how they're going to include anybody who isn't me. Yeah. What's their plan moving forward?
Yeah.
Because,
you
right?
know, we are a part of the hockey community. We like hockey. We're involved with hockey.
Right.
How are you going to go get people that aren't us?
How are you going to grow the population? How are you going to grow the fan base? The NHL Diversity and Inclusion Report, I'm going to say right now, was a good start. It's nowhere near being done.
No, it's a first draft.
This doesn't even qualify as first draft. It just qualifies as framework for what we need to build around.
Yeah. This is like, I was saying this before the show, like this is a draft of a document I sent to my manager. I'm like, I cooked this up in like an afternoon. I'll pick it up on Monday, but we got to get like other people in to talk about this so we can fill this out.
So I was reading through, trying to figure out everything. The first thing that hit me hard was apparently they have a chair for the NHL's Youth and Inclusion Committee. Do you know who that person is?
Who?
That would be none other than former Hockey Canada president and CEO Scott Smith.
Off to a great start.
Holy shnikes.
That's legitimately a bold move, NHL, to put a guy who's been defending sexual assault cases for years with money that he didn't have, with money that he didn't own, in front of the hockey's Youth Hockey Inclusion Committee.
I just...
Okay, so fine. You know what? Maybe that's the only mistake they made, except it's not. Because the NHL's Exclusive Inclusion Council, that's the EIC, if you're going to look for the short term for it, Executive Inclusion Council. So these are the people that are high up in the NHL that legitimately want to see more inclusion. It's comprised of club owners, presidents, and general managers to guide the diversity and inclusion efforts. Okay? Now before you go, okay, moving on, stop and think about that group for a second. What are they?
Old, straight, white, rich men.
That would pretty much nail all the problems that are, if none of them have ever experienced, and I'll say this as well, non-disabled.
Yes, that too.
If you're trying to include people of all walks of life, having rich, old, white, straight, non-disabled men kind of defeats the purpose.
We got our first black general manager this year.
Correct. Yeah.
There is not a black owner.
Correct. Yeah.
There's not an Asian owner right now.
Not a GM.
Not a GM.
Oh, not until this year. There was nothing before this.
There is not an indigenous owner.
No. There's not even... there have been indigenous coaches. They're
not part of this, though.
You're not included in the president's, general managers, or club owners.
No.
Again, there's a problem here. As it stands, in reading through this, there is currently no league-wide equity or anti-oppressive education being provided to any of the players.
None.
So if you want to change the culture, don't do it through the people that are, you know...
Part of the problem.
Staff do get training. Staff and front offices do get training.
Okay, good.
But only, quote, 24 clubs have engaged or are about to engage an external provider to educate and provide training and employees on diversity
and
inclusion.
So you can
issues.
Actually break that 24 down even more. Because, like, there are going to be teams that have done it, which I'm assuming, if we know anything about these organizations, Seattle's got to be one of the ones that's already done it.
Sure.
But... that could be Seattle, who has done it, and 23 clubs who are thinking about doing it soon.
Okay, hold on. Who are the 8 teams that haven't even signed up for this?
Yeah.
Like, if you're about to start doing this, okay, at least you're taking a baby step. You're not quite there yet, but you're getting there.
I mean, you're still ways behind the...
There are 8 teams still standing on land waving at the boat.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, hey... Was there a boat trip today?
Apparently not.
What's sailing away?
Not to Diversity Inclusion Island, I'll tell you that
much. Bye-bye.
Under the employment section, here's a huge problem that I found that I was like, this has got to be a misprint. Under the employment section, there's mention of Native American recruitment, which completely misses the mark about diversity and inclusion because the term indigenous peoples is far more inclusive and appropriate here without singling out specific people.
Yep.
Native Americans don't live in Canada.
Native American is a uniquely American term.
Native Americans don't even call themselves Native Americans.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand this. So, again, the NHL chooses to use U.S. terminology rather than a more global term. And on top of this, there is no team outside of one that mentions truth and reconciliation. That one team that mentions it is the Ottawa Senators.
Oh.
You know, where the Canadian government lives.
Yeah. Also, not the Winnipeg Jets, because the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation is right there.
Yeah, well, again, we don't have that here.
It's right there. I can't see it because there's a building in the way,
but
it's right there.
But it's right there. I understand what you're saying. It's here on the campus of the University of Manitoba.
It's easy. They have a relationship with... Like,
but again, you have
the Wasak
night. Like, you have the night where you're honoring the Indigenous people, and you don't even include the truth and reconciliation information in there.
You have the land acknowledgement before every single game.
That's enough. Apparently, that's enough.
You put in the amount of effort to have that crazy graphic that shows up on the ice.
Again, let's keep going on this. It's hard to take this document seriously when language doesn't mention anything about fan engagement content or in-game multilingual information outside of English, French, and Spanish. So those are the three identified in, I mean, America's a little bit different, but two official languages of Canada, English mm-hmm. and French, and at least one that's recognized as sort of a majority language in the States, in Spanish.
Yeah.
It baffles me that you can have a major network like Sportsnet not push back on this, considering that they have an entire Punjabi broadcast, an entire Indigenous language broadcast that was in Cree. There was a whole pile of different languages.
Yeah, on APTN.
But Cree and APTN in terms of Sportsnet helping that out as well. There have been broadcasts in Cantonese, Mandarin, Hindi, Vietnamese, Tagalog, I mean, German, Arabic. Sportsnet has had all of these different languages on a broadcast. Some of them were streaming, but still, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They're broadcast in those languages. But again, this is a very melting pot document written in U.S. terms.
Mm-hmm.
Not recognizing that Canada celebrates its multiculturalism.
Yep.
We don't have just Americans here. We have Ukrainian Canadians. We have German Canadians. We have Filipino Canadians. We have the ability to tell people
the
that
idea
you
of
hold both cultures.
Yeah. The idea of the cultural mosaic is that when people come here, their ethnic background and their culture is stitched into the fabric of what it means to be Canadian. That's like the ideal of Canada. This is just saying... All of these panels of this mosaic don't matter. It's just these ones right here.
So I'm shocked by this. Because again, if I'm Sportsnet, I'm pushing back on this already. You need to do better than this, NHL.
Yep.
Here's the next part. This statement drove me bananas. Quote, 25 clubs have launched or are about to launch specific marketing campaigns towards BIPOC communities, LGBTQ+, women, and or people with disabilities, unquote. The whole problem with that entire statement is the word marketing campaign.
Yes.
Or the phrase marketing campaigns. The problem is that if you're marketing to people, it's an attempt to derive profits from those people. You're trying to sell them something. Instead of including them in the conversation, you're now selling them on this game. Instead of making them part of the game, you're selling them the idea of the game. This is entirely wrong in terms of diversity and inclusion because you're not being diverse or inclusive.
It's not about
you're just selling tickets.
Yeah, it's not about having women's night or putting selling a jersey or a t-shirt, selling rainbow tape.
We have women's styled clothing.
Yeah, this is
who cares?
This is about bringing people in for events and education. And bringing them into front offices, giving them opportunities.
So I went searching through the document to see who was consulted for this. Because again, I can't believe this was allowed to be written and published.
Yes.
No mention outside of owners and NHL staff who wrote this document was included. There were no experts or advocates that were consulted or included according to the information. There were no members of smaller communities who were consulted or included in terms of various prominent advocates for those communities. LGBTQ+ communities face distinct challenges within that own sort of broad umbrella of letters. There are individuals, and we've seen it
treat it like a monolith.
Right. We've seen it with transgender people lately where they've been abused, they've been harassed and hounded.
there are unique challenges for each member of that community.
That community and its sub-communities, its smaller communities, faces individual and distinct challenges in their own rights. Again, how many of these people, how many of the people on the Executive Inclusion Council are blind or deaf or confined to a wheelchair? None of them are. And yet they operate in arenas where some fans cannot access that arena. Like, this is the stuff that I legitimately look at and I go, how are we so blind to this?
How are we so far behind? And then I realize, oh, yeah, because the league is run by a bunch of old rich white dudes.
Again, all of these challenges need to be addressed, and all of them need to be addressed within those communities, not just going to those communities and going, hey, guess what? We can sell you tickets.
You know, the interesting thing I just realized, the ownership of the Ottawa Senators just changed hands.
There are two women running that.
Two young women.
Well, okay, hold on. There are two women that are technically in charge, but they still report to a board, yeah.
Yeah.
I get that.
But their voice still is like...
Right.
But that's the thing, right? They're the ones that took a little bit of a step forward. Granted, Ottawa is the center of Canadian government, so...
But I think...
Reconciliation's a big piece, but like that's like one half step forward... Where this is just like a bunch of steps backwards.
So again, regarding challenges in culture, changing the culture in hockey. I mean, there's always going to be a challenge to change the culture, and we know that. The culture in hockey stinks, but the NHL has done nothing to activate players in terms of education or advocacy, nor did they leverage players as agents of social change and or inclusion. None of that is written in as an obligation for every team to undertake. That you have to have players and people go out to the communities that we're talking about including and be involved in those communities. Whether it be, and again, I'm going to say this out loud, and I don't care what people think, but Braden Holtby might be one of the best guys because he is involved in every Pride Parade. Doesn't matter what goes on. Mm-hmm. Him and his wife walk in those Pride Parades. They're there with people. It doesn't matter whether he's playing, hurt, injured, you know, whatever. He makes the time to go and do that. I'm only using Braden Holtby as the example because he's so very active in terms of making it clear that he's a supporter.
He's an ally.
But and I look at that and I go, why is it that we can't find anybody to do that in every city? In all 32 cities.
We have the Hockey Diversity Alliance who was not involved in this.
They walked away from this because they said that the NHL was not listening to their recommendations.
Exactly. And the Hockey Diversity Alliance has people like Wayne Simmonds on it, Akeem Alou on it, Nazem Kadri on it. Oh, people from BIPOC communities.
Yeah, well, we apparently did nothing to address that either. So of the white guys that are running the diversity inclusion document here, writing this anyway, be more specific. You're going to have to make this a thicker document. It's going to have to contain specific information for specific communities regarding specific challenges they face.
Yeah. There should be an umbrella document, and then there should be a document for every single community.
And you absolutely need to go to these communities and get input from them and help them educate you, not the other way around.
Yeah. It's not just put out a thing and say, oh, yeah, we're going to be open to having these people involved. No, it's about putting the effort into actually going out and engaging with these people. You don't tell marginalized groups what their level of involvement is or what, you know, what they're going to do. They tell you what you're going to do.
Again, it's a start. I will give them that, but that's about as far as I can take it.
I'm not going to say
it better not be the finished final product, because if it is, you missed the mark again.
Yeah.
A lot of disgusting stuff going on in hockey as well. You may have heard that the Edmonton Oilers and Bakersfield Condors dismissed their head athletic trainer, Chad Drown. It became, on October 9th, the Condors became aware that trainer Chad Drown had been charged with a very serious felony offense relating to contacting a minor to commit a sexual offense in the state of California.
And
he worked for a short time for the Tucson Roadrunners, so it's not like he hasn't been around the AHL before. I don't want to say this, and I'm not trying to relate this anyway, but he also worked for 2 weeks for Hockey Canada.
He got what he deserved. He got charged. He got fired. Good.
Speaking of a guy who was neither charged nor fired, strange report came out from the NHL on the 15th about Ian Cole. On October 7th, a woman posted a very detailed, very descriptive several encounters with Ian Cole about some of the stuff that he had done when she was a teen in high school.
Yeah.
And she made it clear that she had told Ian that this was going, that she was a teen in high school, and Ian seemed to not, again, this is all alleged. None of this has been proven. None of this has been found to be any sort of valid, you know, testimony in court or anything like that. But basically, it came down to a culture of misogyny, some sexual assault in there involved, and Ian Cole basically denied it all. So Ian Cole was suspended by the Tampa Bay Lightning while they did the investigation. So he's basically missed a week of hockey. On the 15th, the NHL came out, though, and said that it concluded its investigation, the anonymous allegations posted on social media against Ian Cole. So again, 8 days later, the NHL has done a complete and thorough investigation in 8 days. I don't know what kind of, what crack team of lawyers they had working for them, but they must have had everybody engaged on this, because they found no evidence to substantiate the allegations made against Ian Cole.
I mean,
but so here's the problem, though. The investigation included two separate interviews with Mr. Cole, so they got his side of the story, as well as interviews with NHL club personnel and other individuals. Who are the other individuals with potentially relevant information?
People who, I
know Ian Cole. He's a great player. You want to come talk to us?
Sure. Well,
who cares? Further, the investigation included a detailed review of online and social media, public data, and court records and law enforcement checks. What court records and law enforcement checks would you need to do? This woman hasn't reported it to anybody. She posted it online.
Yeah, under potentially a false name. So they probably ran a criminal record check on Ian Cole. They probably ran her name through some databases, probably went and...
Despite attempts by the league to make contact with the anonymous source of the social media post, those efforts were unsuccessful.
So the response to her tweet where they said, please DM us, 24 hours before they said nothing, they came up with that statement.
What? If you're a lawyer and you legitimately were unable to find any information...
That should have been step one.
But how are you unable to find any information on a woman who posted to social media? And I'm not saying that there are, it's easy. I get that. I'm not saying that this is going to be an easy process.
Yeah.
But to simply close the book on this 8 days later?
Yeah. Okay. So I understand. Like, we can't just assume Ian Cole is guilty and
right.
say, like,
we're not
just,
saying
he's going to be suspended indefinitely. So he does, like, have the right, he can return back to work and start playing again and keep going.
Right.
But don't just close the investigation and say, it's done, right?
Like, this is what happened with Hockey Canada.
Yeah.
They legitimately just said, okay, we're done with this. We're gonna pay you money, you go away, and we're done.
You gave 24 hours for her to turn around, be comfortable with talking to you, trust talking to you, trust talking to your lawyers, maybe even notice from an account that's probably not her primary account. It's only got the one tweet. It's probably an anonymous account that she made. She probably hasn't checked it very much. She probably sent the tweet, like, deleted Twitter off her phone and, like, just left it. You give less than 24 hours. Leave the door open. Wait. Give it a little bit more time.
Don't even announce that you're okay, we're investigating and let it go. And then whenever the next...
Ian Cole can return to the ice, we're going to continue with our investigation.
Whenever the next chunk of news falls, then announce that. But don't just... Okay, we're done with this. We're moving on.
Yeah. If it sits and it's silent for like...
I don't understand how the... Whatever. Hockey is so
like,
broken.
Here's the thing. It's also indicative that... I mean, the NHLPA's statement on the whole situation was a whole other kettle of fish. I do understand there needs to be a process that goes through where this doesn't, like, you know, doesn't impact other people or doesn't, like, can't be weaponized in some way. I understand that. There needs to be a process in place, and also you need to, like, not just essentially shut the door and throw the book out the window and pretend it never happened. Right?
But
These are experienced lawyers. They should understand this stuff.
But it shocks me, though. And again, I get that Ian Cole doesn't want this hanging over his head all season.
Yeah.
I get that. I understand that. But if this is the case, if you're legitimately a lawyer trying to get a hold of, you can subpoena Twitter for information in terms of IP address, figure out where this woman lives. Mm-hmm. You know that she was living in a specific area based upon Ian Cole's previous...
Well, they talk about
how she had
a school uniform.
Right.
How many schools in that area also have a uniform?
Just track his playing days. You'll know exactly what community it's in if that's the case.
Yeah, you can get it down to like a year, and then you know, okay, it's probably in this number of years. Okay, it's a person who was in high school at this point. They wore a uniform. It's probably a private school.
Again, I don't understand how this can't be done. If you're a lawyer, you're the worst lawyer on the planet.
Yeah.
And if the NHL is okay with this, if the NHL is fine with just letting this go, they deserve to get sued for everything they're... You make $1 billion annually, be prepared for to pay something out here.
Yeah.
Because you've dropped the ball big time.
Yeah. Like, we're not saying that, like, ruin Ian Cole's career and, like, never let him play again. It's
again,
like, just
if he's innocent, he'll be found innocent.
Yeah.
It's not hard. He's not, this is not a criminal, a court of, all you're doing is looking for, to establish whether or not she has credibility in her story, and then you can determine whether or not you suspend Ian Cole for however long or not.
Yeah.
Done.
He's just going to continue playing, leave the investigation open. If she contacts you, she contacts you.
If she wants to go to the police and file charges, she can. Then it's a different story altogether.
Exactly.
This is simply something for the NHL to look into and go, do we want this guy playing for us?
Yeah.
It would be the exact same thing as if somebody said something and your boss came to you and went, we're going to have to do an investigation, yeah. Jason, so we're going to suspend you with pay, but unfortunately you can't work here while we're doing the investigation.
Sure. Do your thing.
And if you're found innocent, come on back, Jason. There was nothing found against you. We're completely... Here's the information that we have.
Exactly.
And if you're found guilty, well, unfortunately, we're going to have to terminate your...
Exactly. It's easy.
This isn't a court of law. This is simply just being a good human being.
Is doing your due diligence.
Right. I don't know. It drives me nuts.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, if she goes to the police and files charges, they're going to have to reopen that investigation. They're going to look real stupid.
Speaking of reopening investigations, Western University and London, Ontario need to get their heads checked quickly. The London Police Service in Ontario started an internal review of a sexual assault case involving two hockey players, one whom continues to play for the Strathroy Jets. Police Chief Steve Williams said in a statement on Friday that allegations are related to two incidents in March 2018, and due to media interest, he has ordered the review of this case. TSN reported Thursday that the complainant in the case alleged she was assaulted by a then-Western University hockey player and a semi-pro hockey player. CBC News has confirmed through court documents that a player on the team was charged with sexual assault dating back to that time. So it happened.
Mm-hmm.
If charged, it happened.
Yep.
In terms of the charge and the charges sort of being held. Westhead, though, pressed... He said, that's not good enough. I want to know more. The woman was discouraged by London police from pressing charges. What?
Huh?
The woman was hospitalized three times between December 2019 and April 2021 due to suicidal ideation and PTSD over the incidents.
That doesn't, like, just happen.
Hold on. We're going to go even further on this now because Westhead did some more digging. The chief said charges were not laid in the second allegation of sexual assault, which involved the same complainant but a different man. So again, there were two different things, but said the second one. So that maybe is where she was discouraged after the first one not to do the second one. Again,
yeah.
There's no timeline set up for that, but basically they're looking at that.
Because you can't harm this guy's career, you
again,
know?
This is the second time in 3 months that the London Police Service has undertaken a review of a case involving hockey players. In July, obviously, the 2018 World Junior team is the one that was open then. Now we're talking about this one that was open. To make it clear, this player had no affiliation with that investigation.
Just
either.
Completely different teams that are completely
right.
Separate from that incident.
But the complainant told TSN she was at London home of the Western University player when she was sexually assaulted and then humiliated in front of his friends.
I mean, like...
CBC News contacted King's University College. The college said no one was available to comment on code investigations or complainants. TSN reported the school suspended the player for 18 months and removed from the team.
Here's the thing.
So,
police should not be making value judgments and telling people not to press charges.
So
that shows favoritism.
Hold on, though. Here's where things get absolutely disgustingly scary. Globe and Mail's Robin Doolittle reported in 2017... Mm-hmm. That, and here's the number you want to hold on to, one-third. So Robin Doolittle reported in 2017 that one-third of sexual assault allegations between 2010 and 2016 were considered to be, quote, unfounded, unquote, by London police.
Okay, I'm going to hit you with some numbers.
So, hold on, a third. So that means one out of every three women that came forward were told there's no proof, there's no evidence of any sexual assault.
It's not like that they're proven that the allegations were false or anything. It's just that they couldn't find any evidence in the time that they spent trying to find the evidence.
So however little time they spent, combined,
it could have been 24 hours.
Combined with the little effort they gave to do it, like, meant that, you know what, it's unfounded.
That literally could mean they make the allegation, they go talk to the guy, he says no, they go back and say, there's no evidence.
That's literally, I write it on a manila file folder, I put the file folder on my desk for a day, and then I push it into the garbage can.
Yeah.
That's the effort that we're talking about here.
Okay. I'm going to hit you with some numbers, though. Depending on what source you look at, it's very... False sexual assault allegations are an incredibly complicated thing to study because you're mostly going off of self-reporting, and there's a lot because, you know, in cases like this, because sexual assault is one of the most underreported and underprosecuted crimes in Canada, court records and police reporting records aren't sufficient to actually look at what the problem, how big the problem actually is. You have to go talk to victims and perpetrators and say, how many of you are there? How many times this has happened? All of it, like self-reporting sure. information.
Sure, yeah. Makes sense.
Numbers range from between 4 to 10%. The 10% of the is like the highest amount that people have found in research studies, but the general consensus is that between 4% and 8% of sexual assault allegations are unfounded. And that's a broad definition. Like, that could mean that they couldn't find any evidence, that the person, you know, recanted for whatever reason, that there actually wasn't something, like something didn't happen, the person admitted that they were false. There's a whole bunch of different reasons that could be considered a false allegation. 4 to 8%. We're talking 33%.
We're talking that 4 to 8 times. 4 to 8 times more often in London
yes.
in a 6-year period.
So that tells you London is an outlier. There's something there you have to investigate.
Again, they have 2 open investigations into hockey complaints now.
Yes. That were at the time pushed aside and said, nothing happened here. It's not that big a deal.
Both people said that they had been told by London police just to walk away.
It's a systemic issue with the... It seems to me to be a systemic... Because it's many times higher than the national average.
But when you hear this, though, this is why victims don't come forward.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
If police are telling you we're not going to investigate it, what's the point of reporting it then?
Exactly. That's that. When you lay the facts in front of you, how can you just sit there and say, oh, no, it's no problem. No, it's just false allegations. Like, we're literally showing you the numbers.
No, apparently that doesn't matter to people, though. They just go, well, you know.
Police are deliberately telling people not to press charges because they're hockey players.
Boys will be boys. No, that's
you're
crap.
You're going to ruin their careers.
Again, that's crap. This woman's been in the hospital 3 times over the course of 2 years because she has PTSD and is thinking about suicide.
You know whose life is going to be ruined by a sexual assault?
It shouldn't cost her
the victim.
It shouldn't cost her $200 a month for therapy when the other guy's walking around free.
Yeah, or making millions of dollars in the NHL.
So, again, this is the culture we're talking about, folks,
yes.
If you're wondering. Got some funny... Well, not funny, I guess. This isn't funny either. Evander Kane's back in the news as well. Because according to documents found, facts.com, facts.com, went and found that, according to court documents in 2016-2017, Kane had adult relations with Jane Doe, a woman by the name of Jane Doe, while still being with his eventual wife, Anna Kane. The problem, though, is that Jane Doe is now suing him for $6 million in damages because of this. In the documents, Jane Doe claims that Kane breached an oral contract. Documents also claim that Kane is guilty of fraud, misrepresentation, intentional infliction of emotional distress, and promissory estoppel. Over the course of the relationship, Kane reportedly forced Jane Doe into 3 separate abortions. May 13, 2018, led to a 3rd pregnancy. Jane told Doe that she was going to, Doe told Kane that she was going to bring this pregnancy to term. Kane offered $1 million. Doe refused.
Yep.
June 4th, it's literally 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, Kane agreed to pay Jane Doe $3 million to terminate the pregnancy, which she did. By June 29th, she received a final confirmation of the termination of pregnancy. Kane hasn't responded to this yet, but there's a court date set right now for February 3rd, 2023, so this is a very real thing that's going to happen.
He could miss... I mean, he could send his representation, but...
All I'm going to say is...
like...
so we got that
I back. Know, like, a lot has been thrown around at Evander Kane, but at a certain point you have to say, where there's smoke...
where there's smoke, there's a wildfire just raging.
Because this is separate from the other incident
right.
where somebody alleged that he had paid for them to get an abortion as well.
Another fun story.
And this is also separate from the allegations his wife has made.
Another fun... Well, yeah, that's completely separate. Another fun story, though, from the North American Hockey League. The Bismarck Bobcats beat the St. Cloud Norsemen on Saturday, October 8th by a 7-4 score. That wasn't the thing that stood out, though, because it was basically a game straight out of Slapshot. Sticks, gloves all over the ice, players paired off to scrap, all that kind of fun stuff, including a full line brawl in the third period.
All right.
When the dust settled, though, this is where things get a little crazy now, because St. Cloud's Jake Hossu was atop the leaderboard with 94 penalty minutes in that game. 94 minutes. How do you amass 94 minutes, you ask? Well, he had penalties that included roughing, cross-checking, fighting, instigating, continuing an altercation, and abusive officials. Not only was he abusing officials, he wrestled two linesmen to the ground before re-engaging in a fight.
Yeah, but he didn't bite or eye gouge, so, you know.
I guess, yeah.
Did really break the rules.
So Hossu was suspended by St. Cloud or on St. Cloud's line chart anyway for Sunday's game. But the North American Hockey League has a policy in that they don't release suspension information. Mm-hmm. Is that not insanity to not know what the guy was suspended for? Like, we're guessing it's abusive official. Like
that usually carries an right. automatic suspension.
But there's no information on how long or for mm-hmm. why he did that, why he's being suspended. Like, you would think there's some indication. I mean, every other league puts it out, but according to the North American Hockey League, no, it's an internal matter now.
Like, I hope he knows. My genius idea is that his team has to kill off a 94-minute penalty.
Can you imagine that? Like, if it was a playoffs and they met?
Whole game down 5-on-4.
Well, forget the whole game. You play, like, an entire game and a half.
Yeah. 94 minutes.
Well, that would be crazy. I'd like that.
That's my genius idea.
We've got 9 minutes left. We want to run through some fun stories, some eyebrow-raising stories. For those that don't know, the Italian men's national team has a brand-new head coach in Iron Mike Keenan. I don't know how fluent Mike Keenan is in Italian, but I can tell you he probably knows a few words anyway, like ciao, buongiorno.
Nothing? Why him?
I don't know. I have no idea. Finnish goaltending sensation Noora Ratu from the Finnish women's hockey team. She announced her international career is over. She posted her retirement information via Instagram. So Noora Ratu is officially done playing for Finland at the international level, which kind of sucks because she was a fantastic goaltender. Mm-hmm. Connor Chalk, former Regina Cougar, is now going to be officially a Lion as he will open the season on Trois-Rivières roster in the ECHL. So the Trois-Rivières Lions get Connor Chalk, which is
very well deserved.
You know what? Good on him. I think that's an awesome opportunity for him. I did not know this, but Tim Vanstone was playing there last year. He retired.
Really?
Yeah, he's now working as a marketing analyst or something for a pipeline company in Alberta. So Tim Vanstone's done with hockey.
Oh, that's
at least
wild.
Professional hockey.
Yeah,
anyway.
He's probably like playing senior hockey out in Alberta
now. Yeah, something
now,
like that or whatever. But
I mean, he's good enough to play senior hockey.
But I was like, Vanstone called it quits. He's only like 25 years old.
Oh, he probably got like such a good position from that. Though.
Oh, I'm sure he got it.
He's probably like, I could make way more money doing this.
Probably, especially out in Alberta.
Damage my body for $400 and a grilled cheese every week or
for a $5 per diem.
Yeah.
Fun news out of Sweden. I'm going to play this clip for you quickly. It's just a 20-second clip, so let's see if I can get it going here.
Det är den sekvensen där pucken tar höger upp på skridskorna när man är oskyddad. Men fortsätta spela när Fasokas skickar den där rakt i mål och då har.
So you may not have caught the name, and that's okay, because at first I didn't catch the name either in terms of what was going on. But that was Leksand playing Linköping, and that was a goal by Annika Fazokas. She scored. The most important part of that, though, is former Mount Royal Cougars forward Anna Pershey picked up her first point on a drop pass to Fazokas. So
yeah,
good for her.
Yeah, let's go.
So Pershey's on the board there in the SDHL. Good to see that. Speaking of SDHL, Bailey Barassa of the Saskatchewan Huskies is now headed over there as well. It was announced last week that Barassa is headed to Modo. Well, she'll join Jennifer Wakefield and Regina's own JC Magwood on the Modo team. So Barassa heading over there and getting an opportunity to play over there as well.
SDHL is just Canada West 2.
Yeah, again, so I'll just run through this quickly. Pershki with Lexan in terms of playing over there. The Thunderbirds have like 90% of like SDE. Like Hannah Clayton Carroll, Kelly Murray, and Matea Fisher all play there, as well as Lindsay Post from Alberta plays for SDE. Again, JC Magwood's playing at Moto. Danielle Stone is playing for HV71, although she hasn't played yet this season. There's a ton of Canada West talent over there. Like, it's fantastic in terms of seeing everything that's going on. I'm excited to see players get over there and play and do well. So good for her in terms of getting over there. For those that don't know, the reverse retros were released today. We're going to break that down next week. We're going to go through all the jerseys that we like and don't like in terms of every team. But let's get the quick and dirty version. What do you think of the Jets' new reverse retro?
It's missing something, I got to say. I like it. But again, it's a first draft. I think it's missing something. It's missing a bit of red.
It feels incomplete in that it just doesn't feel like the And again, maybe it's that memory that you have of the Jets wearing the jerseys.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel complete. It feels like it's missing some sort of splash of color in there.
Exactly. Like, I mean, it's great that we're finally, because obviously, like, the logo that I have on my hat, like, everyone knows, like, this iteration of the Jets logo and jersey were great.
Yeah, the heritage logo.
But I think that finally people are embracing how underratedly great that 90s Jets logo and jersey actually were.
They were good, but again, they just need that bit of color to pop it out a little bit. But
we love making the whiteout stuff.
We promised it last week. We got 4 minutes today to do it. So Bowie, let's bring up Bowie and let's get your thought, Jason. I want all of your thoughts on Bowie in the next 2 minutes.
Okay, so you have a franchise that's owned by Jerry Bruckheimer, yet you pick a sea troll, a thing that. Obviously, already, you're saying, like, we're not going to do a Kraken because Krakens don't actually exist. It's a fantasy creature. A sea troll doesn't exist either. I don't know what we're doing. You have the guy that made the consensus, this is what Davy Jones looks like. Do that. Cthulhu is in the public domain. How crazy would that be to just, like, have Cthulhu as your mascot with, like, weird lettering on the back of the jersey? Like, you have so many options, but you pick a dumb-looking sea troll that, like, it's not even, like, bad to the degree of, like, Hunter is. Hunter the Lynx in Edmonton, where it's just, like, terrifying, and you kind of like it because it's so bad, it's scary.
Right, yeah.
And it's not as ridiculous as Gritty, where you're just like, that's just stupid and awesome. Great. No, it's just bad. It's just dumb and bad.
Okay, I'll say this, and I'm not against the idea of everything you just said, but mascots are made for kids, and don't get me wrong, but Bowie
is terrifying.
But Bowie can get away with it if with the whole Trolls explosion, right? I'm not saying that's a good reason, but the whole Trolls movie and all that kind of idea, it looks like what they're going for in terms of following this up. My problem with this whole thing, though, is, again, how do Trolls relate to Kraken in terms of, I get that they're both sea creatures, if that's what you're going to say, but there are a myriad of sea imagery you could still use,
like,
that would relate closer to what a Kraken is dealing with.
A narwhal.
Like, again, and they said they don't want to use the octopus because of the whole Detroit Red Wings tie-in.
Okay.
I get that Al the Octopus, but they don't even use Al the Octopus in Detroit anymore.
Yeah.
He's done.
Also, you could do something from the sea that isn't an octopus. I get that there's a tie to Seattle with the statue. But
again, like, you got starfish, you can do mermaids, you can do fishermen, you can do pirates, you can do anything.
Yeah. No. Even the more ridiculous mascots actually, like, look good in, like Sparky the Dragon. A weird idea, but it works. Because, like, you look at the color scheme.
I prefer,
like,
Niles.
All right. But, like, Yuppie works.
In the fun part, though, you mentioned Bruckheimer.
Yes.
Bruckheimer's got a fun tie-in because, as we know, he owns he's a part owner of the Seattle Kraken. Mm-hmm. But Bruckheimer really wanted to up the entertainment value in the arena. So he decided to call on Hollywood music man Hans Zimmer. Again, they worked together on Pirates of the Caribbean. They got all that music for Pirates of the Caribbean. Bruckheimer convinced Zimmer to write an 8-minute pregame introduction musical theme for all of their pregame stuff and all of their commercials.
Nice.
Like, I, I get the movie imagery, I get all that kind of stuff or whatever, but I'm starting to get a little sick of Seattle not being as original as they possibly could. Like, you kind of figured that there was going to be some Hollywood imagery, some Hollywood stuff involved, but asking Hans Zimmer of all people, come on.
You already
own Pirates of the Caribbean. Just take one of those songs. No, we're going to get our own unique setup in terms of that setup going. So
I have another idea. Bruckheimer worked on Clash of the Titans, right?
I believe so, yeah.
There's a Kraken in that movie.
There is.
Why not cartoonize that?
I don't know. But we're going to get out of here right away in terms of what's going on. Jason, what's going to happen this week on your show?
This past week we talked about new mobility aids that use
new mobility
cheap technology and machine learning to have a constantly learning support for your ankles.
Are we talking like
it's like a boot for like a boot exoskeleton helping people walk.
Okay, that's kind of cool. In terms of everything else going on, we're gonna get caught up again next week, folks. Stay tuned for Skippy on Free Range Radio here on 101.5 UMFM. We are out of here for another week. Thanks for tuning into the hockey show here on the radio, and certainly if you missed it, catch the podcast a little bit later. We'll have that up as well, but for now, we'll see you next Thursday, everybody. Have a good week.
All right, now, boys, how about a little dinner music?
Nowadays, people tend to look over the real art of DJing.
You are tuned in to CJUM FM. Here we are, 101.5.